Blog Talk Radio.
The views and opinions of this show do not reflect the views and opinions of WikiCuriosity Media or its affiliates. WikiCuriosity Media, changing the world you listen to. Any music featured on WikiCuriosity Media Progress is used with the express written consent of the artist, owner, or distributor. Coming to you live from the WikiCuriosity Studios in Knoxville, Tennessee, it's Behind the Screen Radio Show.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another exciting episode of The Cinephiles. I'm Dan.
And I'm Alex.
And you can join us. You can call in 718-664-9735. Again, 718-664-9735. Or you can hit us up on the Twitch live stream. We are streaming on Twitch at WikiCuriosity Media. You can also follow us on Facebook at Behind the Screens Radio Show and WikiCuriosity Media. You can hit up our website at www.wikicuriosity.wixsite.com/WCMedia. That's a mouthful, but that link is on every Facebook page that we have. You can check out all of our archived shows on blogtalkradio.com/WikiCuriosityMedia. You can also find them on iTunes at WikiCuriosity Media. We also have a YouTube channel at WikiCuriosity Media, Google WikiCuriosity Media, and we're there. We're also on TikTok at Wicked_Angel. We don't have a whole lot of content on these pages yet. We're working on it. We really are. It's been hard finding content to do, but we'll get there. We're working on it. Hopefully, you know, at some point we can start doing video for our live streams, and then we can stream on Twitch on TikTok, you know, and go from there and have fun. So there's that. So it's Wednesday.
It is.
Did not have a show Sunday. We were supposed to review the Atom Project. But due to circumstances beyond our control, we were unable to, unfortunately. So we're back here on Wednesday night. It's been an interesting week.
I'm trying to think of what I even did this week. Yeah, I guess it's been an interesting week.
So, I have to say that, so normally, you know, this is around tax season time. And, you know, we already filed our taxes, got our taxes back and everything. We put aside money for, like, trips and stuff like that that we want to go on later. Later on in the year and stuff. And, you know, there was money that was earmarked for some things that we wanted to do, bills that we wanted to catch up on, pay off and stuff like that. And we got all that done, you know, and I've been really good about, you know, watching what I spend and everything. But Miss Angel kind of gave me the go ahead to splurge a little bit. Because she said it's something that she wants, something that she will use. So I went ahead and got her and I the Oculus. The little VR headset thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the very first game that I download is Vader Immortal. I mean, Star Wars, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to say that, first off, this is absolutely badass. Like, it is fully immersive. Like, when I play it, I forget I'm standing in my living room.
Yeah.
And I've got the headphones in, you know, I've got my earbuds in and stuff like that. So, you know, I've got the sound not outside, but, you know, in my ears. And, you know, they got the vibration and the movement and stuff like that. And I will say that there were some parts that, so it's not a scary game overall.
Yeah.
But there were some parts where you got, like, stormtroopers and Vader and, you know, some of the other bad guys that are, like, right here in your face. And, you know, it is right here in your face. And you're just like, you know, you're backing up because it's, you can almost like feel them right there. It's that intense. So yeah, I played that game. The Angels played, and she's checked it out. She's checked a couple of the games out and stuff like that. And, you know, of course, Liam has his, and he's got, you know, Five Nights at Freddy's and stuff like that on his. So yeah, we did that. And it is pretty cool because, of course, you know, you do play with a lightsaber. You know, you do have a lightsaber. And it's cool because you can pick a lightsaber up from your side,
mm-hmm.
and you're holding it. But you're holding the Oculus controller, obviously.
Yeah.
But you're holding it, and so the immersiveness is so real that the controller felt like it was starting to slip out of my hand. You know, like it was starting to slide down. But to me, it felt like it was sliding down the lightsaber. So what I did is, of course, you know, what do you always do? When you've got something in your right hand, it feels like it's sliding down. You put it against your stomach, and you push it up.
Uh-huh.
That's what I did, and I fucking hit myself in the stomach with the Oculus controller. So yeah, that happened. But it's pretty cool. It really is. I'm not gonna obviously spoil anything for you. Because if you come down, I want you to play it. So there's a Rancor in it. I'm sure you've seen like videos of it and stuff like that.
I've seen the whole series because there was a thing that happened in episode 9 that, that game explained.
Okay. Mustafar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also explains Rogue One as well a little bit. But the Rancor is right in your face. And when it like pops up and jumps at you, I jumped back. You know, I could almost smell his breath. If they had like smell receptors, this thing would have been, like, over-the-top intense. I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
Over-the-top intense at how realistic this was. Well, of course, it's cartoonish. You know, I mean, it's animated. But you're in it. You know? And it's I don't know. It's cool. It's a lot of fun. So I can't wait for you to come down and try it out.
Cool. No, definitely have to.
But that was my enjoyment because that came in Saturday, and you know we've been playing it ever since, obviously. And then, of course, my next purchase, next payday, is going to be the next Star Wars game with the add-on, which is a, from what I understand, it's a more immersive game, like almost a open world type.
I don't know. The only VR Star Wars game I've heard about was the Vader Immortal one. I didn't know that there was any others.
Yeah. Yeah, there's another one. You start out as like a spice miner or something, and then you go on from there. Of course, you know, you learn how to be a Jedi. Because that's how every Star Wars game is.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't they know that there's other... I was even thinking about this like last night and like over the course of a couple weeks now. It's kind of ironic that bringing it up. But like there's other like things in Star Wars rather than being a Jedi. Because I was trying to think of a new like character custom to do out of a figure. I was like, I don't want to do another damn Jedi because I've already done that. I've made my own custom Jedi guy that is like my original character that I placed into the world of Star Wars, and I wanted to do that again, but I couldn't. There was just nothing, so I had to think of like something else to do. And you know, I think I got it pretty okay, but yeah, I mean, in Star Wars, you're either a bounty hunter or a Jedi, or you're a Sith Lord. It's like there's no other thing to do. There's no other jobs in Star Wars, but Star Wars is just like the real world. It has real world jobs and stuff. Like not everybody in the real world is a soldier or a sword fighter or something. Like there's not just three jobs in the real world. Like we have everything.
Right.
And
right.
Then there's interesting stuff that happens in everyday jobs. I mean, obviously jobs that are like a plumber, you're not going to make like a movie out of that. But you can have exciting jobs. Like there's police. There's police in Star Wars. You can make a movie or something out of Galactic. Well, I guess that's what the new Rangers were supposed to be, but that got canceled. But you know, there's other like jobs and stuff besides a bounty hunter and a Jedi that they could do.
The thing is most people who play Star Wars games, they don't want to be a merchant. You know, you don't want to go around the galaxy, you know, in an open world being a merchant and stuff like that. You know, you want to be that top tier player because it's more fun that way. You know, you don't play Call of Duty to be a cook. You know, you play Call of Duty to be special forces. And that's what...
Yeah, but you can, like...
And I get what you're saying.
Take a role-playing game like D&D and apply that to Star Wars. I think there is a game like that. But you apply it to Star Wars, and it can almost be a one-for-one transition. Almost.
Yeah.
Some of the things kind of just get grouped under one umbrella as Jedi or as this. But overall, I mean, you could be a bard in Star Wars, you know?
Yeah. And that's fine for D&D because it's a lot different, but
you can make a story out of that though, like
yeah. I mean, you can make a D&D style Star Wars adventure.
Not everything has to be an ace pilot or a lightsaber fanatic or a master bounty hunter. Like you can
have other things. They actually did have a game like that, Battlefront 2. I mean, you were just a soldier.
Yeah, but it was still kind of following that same thing. It was special forces, quote unquote, stormtrooper that abandons the Empire and goes and turns into a rebel person. I mean, we've had that story before in the new movie, and you're still that guy. Like, you're still the top tier of what you do. You're not just a soldier. You're the best of the best of the best soldier, even though you kind of suck at doing your job all the time. Not the player, but, like, the character kind of sucks at doing her job, like, all the time. And she's a special forces. But...
Yeah, but, I mean, it wouldn't be as exciting if you were...
It was still interesting, though. Like, they could make a Call of Duty game out of... Or a Star Wars game like Call of Duty. I think that's what they were trying to go for, but it just didn't quite hit the nail on the head there.
Yeah.
Like, in Call of Duty, yeah, you're special ops, yeah, whatever, but you start off, like there's two different factions you can play as that you do play as in most Call of Duty games, at least in the Modern Warfare series. You're either SAS or a Marine in the first game.
Yeah.
And you're doing pretty normal stuff. Like, it's pretty realistically normal stuff up until, like, the last two missions where you're saving the world from nukes, you know?
Right.
Other than that, you're just, like, a normal, in a sense, a normal person. And you're not the top dog. You're taking orders from the top dogs. You're the grunt, or the FNG, as they said in Call of Duty.
Yeah. And they could do something like that for Star Wars. That wouldn't be... You know, that wouldn't be too bad. You know, you mean you start out as like a lower level rebel player, or, you know, trooper, and you kind of work your way up with missions and stuff like that until, you know, you're sent on a special mission at the end. You know, that
would
actually
kind of just get thrown into that situation.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm the new guy. Yeah, well, you're the new guy saving the world now, so get used to it.
And I think that would be a pretty cool Star Wars game. I mean, you're not a Jedi that can, you know, throw five stormtroopers across a hall with a wave of a hand. You're the one getting thrown across the hall by Darth Vader.
That's still fun, though, being that the strong Jedi type. It's just we've had so many games that are like it. And some of the games aren't even that great, like... The lightsaber combat, I should say. There's only been, I would say, about four Star Wars games that really nailed the lightsaber combat and the story at the same time. But other than that, they all kind of suck. Not suck. Yeah. They're just kind of meh. Like,
they're
super outdated.
Yeah. My favorite's always been Jedi Academy from the original Xbox. The Jedi Knight series. It's the last one in the series. Jedi Academy. It deals with some of the lore of, you know, Legends, which used to be the Expanded Universe, and it went right along with the storyline in Expanded Universe.
I like that one a lot. The story, that game was a long game too, and you didn't have to play all the missions to complete the story, but that was a long ass game.
It is, and it's a lot of fun because the replayability on it is. It's up there because you can change your character, you can change your path, you can change your power, your force powers, and you can change your missions. You know? So, I mean, the ending and the outcome is generally the same. You know, you defeat the bad guy, but whether you become the, you know, top Jedi or top Sith, that's the difference.
Yeah.
You know.
That game deserves a remaster. I feel like that'd be a pretty good remaster.
I think it would be an awesome remaster. I mean, the graphics were fantastic for the time, but I think if they remastered it like they're doing the Old Republic series, Knights of the Old Republic, I think, you know, kind of updated it a little bit. I think it would be a big sell for EA Games.
Yeah, I think if they updated it, though, they obviously can't keep the same engine, but they need to keep that same lightsaber combat. Like,
yeah,
find out a way to keep the combat the same, because if they change it, it's going to be kind of disappointing. Because that game has, like, the best lightsaber combat, and it's, like, 20 years old.
Well, they need to redo the entire Dark Forces series, you know, Dark Forces and then Jedi Knight and then Jedi Knight 2, and even the expansion pack for Jedi Knight 2.
Yeah, that would sell a lot. But
where you play as Mara Jade.
Yeah, they're coming out with a new one called... It's either Eclipse or Acolyte. I can't remember which one was the game
Eclipse.
And which one was the show.
Eclipse is the game. Yeah, it's an open world Star Wars game.
Well, then Ubisoft was also making an open world Star Wars game. That might be it, I don't know, but around December last year, not 2021, but 2020, Ubisoft announced they were doing an open world Star Wars game.
I think it'd be interesting to have an open world Star Wars game where, you know, there's, because the last one that they had, which wasn't totally open world, Knights of the Old Republic and Knights of the Old Republic 2, had a centralized mission, but, you know, where you, a centralized storyline within the mission, but much open world. Like, I mean, you had to go to these certain worlds in order to get these clues, in order to get to where you're going. And you had to do certain missions to continue the storyline. But there were so many different, like, side quests and stuff like that, that, you know, you could do. And, I mean, even after the game was done, you could go back and complete the side quests.
Yeah.
So, and Fallen Order is similar to that, but it's not really open world.
I run into this argument all the time. I don't think it's open world. It's open world in the sense you get to choose where you want to go. But when you get onto a planet, it's a linear route that you take with shortcuts. That's all it is. And you can backtrack and take a different route to get to a different place, but it's just a shortcut. Like, when you're doing the missions, there's only one way to get to the mission with a shortcut or two, if that. Yeah, it's not really open world. I mean, they have different, like, chests hidden throughout, but it's not – I wouldn't classify it under open world.
No. Whereas Knights of the Old Republic, both of them, are true open world because you don't have to complete those missions. I mean, some of them you do in order to, you know, like I said, in order to continue the storyline. But a lot of them you don't, you know. I mean, the reward is that you get another character, or that you get, you know, like a vibroblade, or you get, you know, upgrades and stuff like that. But if you don't, it's not a detriment to the story. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and you truly get to pick the path that you go down in Knights of the Old Republic series. I mean, you can be a bad guy and, you know, the whole storyline changes if you choose the path of the dark side. Whereas if you choose the path of the light side, the storyline is totally different. So,
yeah.
Plus the worlds were just so immersive and expansive. I mean, we got to go see Korriban. In, I believe, the first one, we got to go see Korriban. And that's a world that we don't get to see very often.
It's not canon anymore. Or Korriban isn't canon. One of the two Sith worlds. There was a Sith world, and they named it something. And then Disney came around, and they renamed it another thing. But yeah, there was like two Sith worlds, and one of them's not canon anymore.
Which I think is stupid. I mean, Korriban was the Sith world. It was the home world of the actual Sith race.
Yeah.
You
know? I think the Clone Wars might have retconned that, actually, when Yoda went there to Korriban. I don't know. Because they went to that same place in Rebels, that same planet.
That was Malachor. Wasn't it?
That's what they, I think so. I think that's what they renamed it to, because whatever, one of the Sith planets doesn't exist anymore, and it's considered Legends now.
I think Korriban is the one that doesn't exist, because I think it was Malachor, because that's where Darth Maul hit out on in Rebels.
Yeah.
So. God, we're such geeks.
Yeah.
If I didn't have all this Star Wars and Star Trek and DC and Marvel knowledge in my head, I could be a physicist.
Yeah, if we applied our passion elsewhere.
We'd be unstoppable.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of of knowledge and, you know, our geekdoms and stuff like that. Tonight we're revisiting an old subject. A couple months ago.
There's three Sith worlds.
Okay.
There's Malachor, Moriband, and Korriban. Korriban, whatever it's called. And then I think Moriband was the one that was wiped from Wreckage. Korriban.
Yeah.
I think that one was the one that was wiped and replaced.
And then they introduced Exegol.
Fuck that planet. Not a planet.
I think that was supposed to be the...
It was supposed to be, and they were like, well, people don't understand these. We'll just do what we want.
Yeah.
And then we'll make Palpatine have a granddaughter, and then she becomes a self-proclaimed Skywalker. Fuck that movie. Anyway, something that I actually care about.
Okay, so a couple months ago, probably about 6 months ago now. No?
It was about a year ago.
About a year ago, yeah, because it was when the Batman was pretty much first introduced and, you know.
It was when Snyder Cut came out.
What's that?
It was when the Snyder Cut came out.
Yes. Yeah.
Because we reviewed BVS or talked about BVS. And then the Snyder Cut we reviewed on Sunday. And then we compared Batmans the following. Yeah. It was like a whole month of just Batman that we did.
Yeah. Because we did the Batmobiles and stuff like that. So we're actually going to condense it a little bit tonight. We're kind of going on the same subject. But we are revisiting it because... The new Batman movie came out a couple weeks ago. And, of course, as you know, we all went and watched it.
Spoilers ahead for those who care.
Yeah.
You've been warned. This is your only warning. If you get spoiled, get over it.
Pretty much.
It's been 2 weeks.
It's been out long enough. Get over yourself. That's okay, because Sunday there's going to be a hell of a lot of spoilers. So the Batman came out to theaters, and of course we all went and watched it Thursday, the night before it opened. Fortunately, we didn't get to see it together because that would have been badass. But Zach and I went, who's my co-host for Sunday nights, and then you went with your mother, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You and your mother went and saw it.
I pulled those tickets out of nowhere. I was able to. I was like, you know what? Let me just see if they have any tickets. And they had them, and it was kind of a pain in the ass to get them because I couldn't get them online for some reason. I was like, fuck it, I'll just go to the theater. Theater was empty, might I add. Nobody went and watched it at my theater. They watched it the following Friday. So I guess people didn't know that it was out previous day.
I don't know. That's weird because so in our theater, you know how you have like the front half, then you have the walkway, and then you have the back half. The whole front half was empty. Like nobody. Of course, it's RPX. It's got the bigger screen. It's what we went and saw. I don't know if we went to RPX. I don't know if we went and saw Spider-Man No Way Home in RPX.
No, we saw it in IMAX, I believe.
No, we saw it in standard.
Something like that. I don't know.
Because I think I tried to get RPX. They didn't have the tickets or something.
I don't think they were doing it in RPX.
Not that day.
No.
But, so the screen is huge. I mean, it is literally wall-to-wall, floor-to-ceiling screen.
Mm-hmm.
And the sound is 10 times better than your typical standard sound. And the seats are a lot more comfortable. So the whole bottom half was empty. Like, nobody sat in the bottom half. Everybody was in the top half. Because, I mean, obviously, it's RPX. You don't want to be looking up at it and, you know, you've got fucking Batman's crotch in your face.
Breaking your neck. Awesome. I can't stand sitting in the front like that.
Oh,
that
I hate it. I hate it. Whenever I get tickets, I try to get as close to the center as possible.
Yeah.
The center of the top row. Because that's literally the best viewing area. But after that, like immediately after the movie, because you went and saw it a couple hours before I did.
I saw it a couple hours before, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you went and saw it at 6, I went and saw it at
8.
9. 8.
8 or 9.
Yeah. Yeah. And then on the way home, of course, you and I talked, which is 25-minute drive, and then another hour and a half out on the front porch, just talking about it. So we talked about it for a good 2 hours.
Yeah.
So, but with the new Batman movie coming out, we wanted to revisit the subject and reevaluate the live-action characters, actors that played Batman. We'll probably touch on Bruce Wayne a little bit. I don't think our opinions have changed on that. We'll touch on the Batmobiles, live-action Batmobiles, a little bit, and some of the villains.
Yeah, like the main ones, like movies that had like 2 or 3, probably won't.
Yeah.
Talk about them. Like Talia al Ghul in The Dark Knight Rises, probably won't talk about her. But Bane we'll talk about.
Yeah. She was kind of a secondary character.
So,
we'll be talking about that. But before we do, we'll take a quick break, get our thoughts together, get settled, and then come back in.
Behind the screen, we'll be right back.
Back in just a minute.
Cause it's down to just you and me. You cut me off and say you're tired of talking. Not as if we can't agree, but you've lost your will to fight. You're packing up all your things to leave. These will be our last words. Then the chance will be lost, and I ain't too proud. If you love me, you would hold me and never let me go. If you love me, you would tell me to be alone. If you cared at all, you wouldn't stop to never go. But you just turned your back to me and said, I guess I'd was
Welcome back to Behind the Screen Radio Show.
Yes, welcome back. There we go. That's a lot better. We had a little bit, like 30 seconds of a song there for you. Just a little teaser. So tonight, we're talking live-action Batman movies and stuff.
Yep.
So, all right, let's kick it off with some of the better villains in some of the worst Batman movies. So from here on out, anytime we say, you know, anything referencing Batman, Batman movies, stuff like that, it's all live action. Because that's all we're talking about tonight is live action. So obviously, the two worst are Batman Forever and Batman and Robin. That's been established.
Yes.
There were a lot of script issues, directing issues,
acting
like scenery,
issues.
Acting issues, scenery issues.
Like the movies were bad.
They were a disgrace to the Batman name.
And you know, I don't get people who can defend them. I don't know. It just blows my mind. I think they're doing it just to be different and have a different opinion. Fuck you if you do, because you know they're bad.
Look at me. I'm different. I like Batman Forever and Batman and Robin.
I like the bat crotch and
the
bat
nipples.
Like, get the fuck out of here.
And
no, those weren't good.
Is Mr. Freeze.
They weren't good movies.
They,
I mean,
were
they could be your guilty pleasures. If you actually like them, and, like, you legitimately like them because you like them, good for you. You are a much happier person than I am. But if you like them because... you just don't understand them. Fuck you.
There's nothing to understand about them.
If you like them and acknowledge that they're bad, congratulations. You deserve an award. But if you like them and you think they're good, there's a place in hell for you.
Look, you can acknowledge that a movie is bad and still like it.
I say this not just because the movies are bad, but there's an Instagram post of a fellow, I don't even remember who it was anymore, but he was doing the Batman review, like what he thought of the movie.
Yeah.
And the first part was like, oh yeah, it was a good movie, blah, 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 blah. And the next part, this was better than Christian Bale's, blah, 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 blah. I don't see how people can like Christian Bale's movies. They suck. I hate them. The George Clooney ones were better. Blah, 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 blah. I was like, okay, pal.
Whoa, okay,
I was with you at a certain point, but you lost me when you said Bale's was worse than Clooney's.
First off, Clooney only did one. It was Val Kilmer and then Clooney. Secondly, Batman doesn't do neon. I'm sorry. Batman does not do neon. Like, all the neon lights and the neon paint and the...
I get it was, like, the era and trying to make it feel different and cool and just being off the chart, just weird. Congratulations. It was fucking stupid.
A convertible one-seater Batmobile with the tail that splits.
You see, here's the thing.
For no reason.
This is a perfect example of just because it's different doesn't mean it's good. When people will give me the excuse, I hate it. This is my least favorite excuse, and I even use it sometimes. My least favorite excuse of a bad movie or of something bad is, well, it's different. That doesn't make it any better. Different isn't always good.
Better. No.
And this might be a little bit political, is when they transform characters into something that they're not. Well, it's different. Doesn't mean it's good. Congratulations, yeah. That is different. That different doesn't mean good. It's fresh and it's different. Doesn't mean it's good. It can be shit. And that was my fear for the Batman 2022, Robert Pattinson. It's different. Fuck. You're right. It's different. That was my immediate thought.
It's a different Batman. So oh God,
when they said,
all over again.
When I was watching interviews and stuff, it was like, well, it's different. It's a different take on Batman. It's something people haven't seen before, and we're ready to blow the fans' minds. I was like, fuck. God damn it.
Yeah.
It's going to be bad.
Now, sometimes different can be good. Miles Morales as Spider-Man, good.
Congratulations.
Good.
That's 100%. A good difference. Good difference.
Beautiful.
The Batman 2022.
Beautiful.
A good difference. Different
George
means good
Clooney.
With these. George Clooney. George Clooney and his bat bulge, different is bad. Okay. It's very bad, and I don't ever want to see it again.
Look at Val Kilmer's bat nipples.
Jesus Christ.
And I'm sorry. Chris O'Donnell is not a good actor. He's really not.
No, but I did like his black and red suit. I like that suit.
The suit was fantastic.
To an extent, I liked it. Like, there are obviously some things I would change about it. But
the bulge.
I like the suit. Yeah, I like the suit. It was a good suit design overall. The same thing with the other two Batman. Like, the overall design of those suits, not terrible. But when you start making, like, weird things onto it is when it becomes bad.
Yeah. It's... I'm looking up something real quick.
Okay, Chris O'Donnell's Robin suit, like his classic Robin suit, that sucked. That was a bad suit.
The green and...
Yeah, like the classic colors and with the orange stuff, that suit was terrible.
Yeah. Okay, so Val Kilmer had the bulge.
I think Clooney had the bulge and the nipples. His was, like,
yeah.
Way too anatomically correct.
Yeah. Because
one
a
of the
lot
two
of,
just went too far with it.
A lot of Val Kilmer's suits... Yeah, the Schumacher films were just... they were not... I don't know.
God, those suits were so expensive, too.
I will
those are like million-dollar
suits. The Sonar suit was pretty cool just because of the colors, the silver and the black.
It got rid of the nipple. It wasn't so anatomically correct.
Yeah, but it just was not – it wasn't Batman. I mean, it's – I don't know. It's very hard to look at, you know, these bat suits and, you know, just be like, oh my God, they're so amazing. You know, I just can't. I can't do it.
I will have to be right back.
Okay, we'll take a break. Okay, we're back.
Yep, just had to take a quick break real quick.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. Okay, so let's get into the villains real quick. So, Batman and Robin, Bane, horrible. Absolutely horrible.
Good comic accuracy with the costume, though, but the acting and the execution was terrible.
Yeah, because Bane's not just this lumbering idiot that's just like, oh, it's fucking Hulk.
Bane is probably one of the smarter Batman villains.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got intelligence
and strength.
And
they turned him into a Mexican Hulk.
Pretty much, yeah. And then Mr. Freeze.
Terrible.
Should not have had Arnold Schwarzenegger play Mr. Freeze. Should have been somebody else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Mr. Freeze isn't really a villain all that much. He's a villain that...
with a purpose.
Yeah, like his wife was dead or dying, and he's dead or dying. What are you going to do? He's not like a villain that is out for materialistic things. He's an angry villain. And they turned him into a pun-making dickhead.
Yeah. Uma Thurman as Poison Ivy, though, actually did good with what she was given.
Yeah.
Batman and Robin. Batman Forever. I love Tommy Lee Jones. I do. Great actor. He was horrible as Two-Face.
Yeah.
His backstory in the movie was very short-lived. Like, you can tell who were the highest paid actors in both of those movies because they got either a lot of screen time and focus, or like the puns, because Arnold was the highest paid actor in Batman and Robin. Like, the budget was slashed just to pay his salary, which is why it turned out really, really crappy. In Batman Forever, you can definitely tell that Jim Carrey was the highest paid, or one of the highest paid. I'm sure Val Kilmer got some decent money from it, but you can tell that a lot of the focus was on Jim Carrey, which, I mean, it was at the prime of his career, honestly. And he played a good Riddler based on Frank Gorshin's Riddler from the 1960s Batman series.
Yeah, he played a very goofy and very... not very a, like, smart Riddler. Like, he tried to outsmart Batman with riddles instead of puzzles. Kind of like, he was more of a, I don't know his name, but he was more of a riddle-focused Riddler instead of, like, a jigsaw-focused Riddler. That's kind of who the Riddler is. He's the Batman's jigsaw character. He just does everything in puns or in riddles.
Yeah, it was... I don't know. And it was such a weird movie. The little boxes that read your mind while you're on TV and everything. I mean, the concept was really, really out there. Like, that should have been something for Batman Beyond versus just regular Batman.
Shouldn't have been a thing.
No. No. Although it was kind of cool to see the Batcave blown up.
Yeah,
Batmobile blown up because the Batmobile was a piece of crap. Batman Returns. Michelle Pfeiffer and Danny DeVito.
Good for the time, but since there have been newer renditions of each character, I don't think they're the best.
They didn't age well.
No.
J. Jack Nicholson as the Joker.
Again, same thing. I get he's iconic and stuff, but it was a good for the time. It still holds up today. Like, out of everything out of those movies, that's one of the things that holds up pretty well. But again, there have been more recent renditions of the character that I personally think were better. That doesn't mean his was bad, though.
No, I agree. I do agree. For me, Jack Nicholson's portrayal is iconic. And I still hold to this day that 89 Batman with Michael Keaton, directed by Tim Burton, is still one of the, in my opinion, one of the best Batman movies out there.
Out of the old ones, it's the only one that I think that could contend. Like, even with, like, Batman Returns, I think the original Batman 1989 is the only one that can contend with modern Batman movies.
I agree.
Take on Batman.
I agree. The Batmobile was fantastic. It was a little over the top on some things, but it was still pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, Michael Keaton as Batman and Bruce Wayne is still phenomenal to me, especially for the time and the script and stuff like that and the budget that they had. You know, because Tim Burton likes to do a lot of miniatures and stuff like that. He likes to take money on movies and do practical effects and stuff like that where he can. And plus, it's 89. There wasn't a whole lot of CGI and stuff like that anyway.
Yeah.
So he did phenomenal. To me, that still holds up. It's still one of my favorite Batman movies to watch.
Yeah, it definitely does. I just don't think it's better or the best, but it holds up. Like, you're not watching it, you're like, oh, God, it's just like George Clooney. No, you're watching it, it's like, wow, this went downhill quick. They started off pretty damn good, and then it went downhill pretty fast.
Yeah. It's still got one of the most iconic lines in any Batman movie ever. Right there at the beginning where he captures the bad guy and he looks him straight in the face and he's like, you know, I'm not going to hurt you. I want you to tell all your friends about me. And the guy says, who are you? And he's like, I'm Batman. And then the movie starts, you know, and then
I
it gets
to be honest, though, not very intimidating. His Batman was an interesting take. I'm just not intimidated by him at all. Like,
no,
Christian Bale's, oh, yeah. Christian Bale's I'm intimidated by. Ben Affleck, definitely intimidated by. Robert Pattinson, very intimidated.
Yeah.
Michael Keaton, not so much. Because he didn't really say it. He didn't really have, like, a Batman voice. He just didn't sound like Bruce. He's like, tell your friends who I am. Who are you? I'm Batman. He's like, who the hell are you? I'm Batman.
Life of selling drugs.
But then you have, like, takes on it. I think Christian Bale said it, too. In his Batman Begins movie, when he was hunting down one of the mob bosses and stuff, and he crushes down on the car, and he goes, I'm Batman. And it wasn't, like, deep and gravelly. It was just serious. You know he was serious. Like, I'm fucking Batman. He's like, okay, bro, I get it. And then even Ben Affleck's never said it.
No.
But his voice was intimidating because you just didn't know. It was almost unhuman because it was altered mechanically instead of him doing it. And then, Jesus Christ, Robert Pattinson, that scene when he shows up on Halloween and all those guys are standing there.
Yeah.
Like, who are you? I'm Vengeance.
Boom.
Who the fuck is that? you're
about to find out.
That scene, we'll get into it, but it was just so fucking cool. He's just boom, 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 boom.
That was
We'll get into how I feel about Robert Pattinson's Batman.
Yeah,
a little bit.
Yeah.
But
that was Robert Pattinson was total fappo. Fuck around and find out. Okay, real quick. Christian Bale, Ra's al Ghul. I'm sorry.
Good villain. I don't like how it ended, but good villain. I don't like how he dealt with Ra's al Ghul. Because the thing is, with Ra's al Ghul, he's a villain, of course, but he's not a terrorist.
Right.
In some cases he was, in this case he was, but overall he's really just a thorn in Batman's side. Like, he doesn't really fuck with Gotham all that much. He does his own thing out in the world, and then Batman has to go and stop him. But overall, he's either a mob boss or a very skilled ninja. He's rarely ever a terrorist. I mean, if he hates Batman so much, he respects Batman as a thing.
Yeah, and that's the thing that they missed in that movie, is that mutual level of respect between Batman and Ra's al Ghul.
They don't hate each other. Well, they hate each other, but
there's a mutual respect.
They can sit down at a table and have a conversation.
Yeah, they could sit down.
Batman's first instinct with Ra's al Ghul is, I'm going to beat the fuck out of you. Because, A, Batman gets his ass kicked a lot by Ra's al Ghul, because it's the guy who trained him. And, B, there's just nothing that provokes him to want to fight. He's not like the Joker, where he has to be stopped immediately. He just does what he does, really. And sometimes things are shady.
The thing about Batman and Ra's al Ghul is that Ra's al Ghul and Bruce Wayne can actually sit down and have a conversation and have a dinner and stuff like that. And then, 10 minutes later, Ra's al Ghul is doing his thing and Batman's trying to stop him.
There's got to be some kind of respect for Batman to be able to have a child with his daughter. Whether that was consensual or not is beyond, but I'm not saying Batman raped his daughter. It was kind of the other way around. But there's still, even then, Batman doesn't hate Talia al Ghul. He actually loves her in most cases and, like, cares for her, but she just makes wrong decisions. She's more of the terrorist type.
She's pissed at Bruce and Batman because he essentially abandoned her in the League of Shadows.
And manipulated, quote-unquote manipulated her son by turning him into not an assassin.
Him into Robin.
What are you going to do?
But
it was a good character. I love who played him.
Liam
but now with people being woke and whatnot, it's cultural appropriation or whatever, because he's not Southeast Asian or whatever. Who cares? Ra's al Ghul wasn't Southeast Asian anyway. He's a white guy with a weird mustache. Let's be honest.
Some cases,
he was Asian because that's where he's based around. But that's not who he was. Get over it. Liam Neeson did freaking fantastic.
Okay, so of course we're going to get into Heath Ledger's Joker.
We got one more for Batman Begins.
Oh, yeah, Scarecrow.
Cillian Murphy as Scarecrow.
Phenomenal.
Fucking phenomenal. And I love Cillian Murphy. I'm biased. I recently watched Peaky Blinders, and then there was a Dunkirk 2. There's another movie he was in, too, that I watched, because it was like just back-to-back-to-back-to-back Cillian Murphy for like a solid 6 months for me. Fucking loved him as Scarecrow.
Oh, yeah, he was phenomenal as Scarecrow. And I'm glad you reminded me of that. I can't believe I forgot that. But absolutely phenomenal as Scarecrow. And, hitting Batman with the fear gas and stuff like that, just really well done. Really, really well done.
Yeah.
Okay, so Heath Ledger is Joker, top-notch Joker, top of the food chain Joker.
Top of the food chain Joker, top of the food chain villains, top of the food chain acting. Basically, just top of the food chain and everything, really.
Everything.
I love that performance. I love it. I could watch it. I could watch it for hours. Just a fantastic performance. It's got to be so good to the point to where, like, my mom and stepdad reference it, and they're not movie buffs like we are.
Yeah.
They'll watch something once and they'll be like, okay. But even they're like impressed with how he turned out. And it fits so well within that universe.
Well, the whole
movie was done so well.
The whole movie was done well. I mean, that is probably, I would say, the best written Batman movie ever.
It contends for it, yeah. I'll explain later, but it contends.
Live action. obviously.
But the problem is, and it's not really the movie's fault, is that it was so good. It's when they came out with the third one. They were like, eh. I mean, it's not that the movie was bad. It's just look what it's following.
Yeah, but if you take it out as a separate movie in and of itself.
It was good, yeah.
Rank it as a Batman movie, not part of the trilogy, but as a Batman movie in and of itself, for me, it's got to be top of the line for me. It's the best.
It's one of those movies where there's nothing. This is going to sound weird, but there's nothing specifically that it did masterfully. There was just a lot of good things in the movie. Like, there wasn't one, I mean, there's parts within the movie that you can pick out and be like, oh, you remember that? That part was cool. Like, there's memorable parts, but there wasn't, like, one, like, what The Dark Knight had with Heath Ledger. Like, that's what the movie was. It was Heath Ledger's movie.
Yeah.
And that's what you associate. There's nothing that you really associate. There's not one thing. There's multiple things that you can pluck out of that movie. And they were all pretty good. Like, they weren't, like...
Yeah.
Oscar-worthy grand master of everything. But they were really good.
Yeah. And then, of course, you have Two-Face in there. It was a very, very...
It was very consistent movie.
Yes. Very consistently well.
Yeah. Two-Face was The Dark Knight, by the way.
Yeah. That's what I'm talking
second
about.
Movie. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm still in The Dark Knight. Very minor character. Very minor villain. I mean, he wasn't even really a villain. He was just out for revenge. It's literally all he was. And he got, twisted.
It was like a collateral damage sort of thing.
Yeah.
To where, like, his performance was good. The actor's performance was good. And there was nothing bad about it. It just didn't have... It had a large focus in one part of the movie.
Yeah. Still better than Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah, out of the two faces, it was the best.
Yeah, yeah. And then we go into Dark Knight Rises. Of course, we've got Bane and Talia al Ghul. I love Bane.
Bane was really good. Tom Hardy as Bane was fantastic.
Tom Hardy.
Scarecrow was in this movie, but he didn't have a huge part.
He was very minor.
Yeah.
Talia had a major part, but... It just wasn't...
It was bad.
I don't know. The movie was bad.
Yeah.
It was. Let's put it on the table. Let's be honest. In the trilogy, it's the worst. It's not as bad as Batman and Robin or Batman Forever. But it kind of ranks down at the bottom.
Yeah. I mean, look at what it was following.
Yeah, obviously. And then...
Yeah, it's a consistent movie. It's just didn't do anything special.
Yeah. We'll skip over Ben Affleck's Batman for right now because it's not a solo movie. You know, he's got it's Justice League and Batman versus Superman in a very minor role in Suicide Squad. But let's get into the Batman. Just because this is... Okay. I'm not a big fan of Robert Pattinson.
I'm a fan of his, just not in the four movies that he did. Four Twilight movies.
Series. Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of a big stain on his resume. Depending on how you look at it. Yes, it made him a lot of money, but they were bad movies for our demographic.
Yeah.
Because if you look at them as movies...
Almost typecasted him.
Yeah, if you look at the Twilight movies as movies and not as, like, gross vampire stuff, they were shot good, edited good, acting for what they were given...
Yeah, it was a back and forth. I mean, the movies were
the bad part. Yeah, the bad part was the acting the acting. It wasn't the cast's fault. Like, the if you take the cast separately, they're good actors. When you put them in that role and give them, I honestly think the problem with Twilight is the story and the demographic isn't targeted towards us, because like teenage girls love those freaking movies.
Yeah.
They had some cool fight scenes. I'll admit that those fight scenes were pretty badass in those movies. But then there's just too much of the girly stuff. It's just like, ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, now, I don't want to watch
that. So when the Batman was announced, and all throughout the entire time that it was
initially
put back, and
when we first found out about it, I was down there.
Yeah.
And it was Robert Pattinson cast as Batman. Fuck.
Yeah.
God damn it. Why would they get this scrawny ass vampire weirdo? And then I did some more research.
That was both of our reactions.
Yeah, I did some more research and watched the movies, but I've watched his performances. It's like, okay, I can see why they would cast him, but he's going to really need to bulk up. He did.
So, this is where we start getting into ranking the different Batman actors. I had so many trepidations with Robert Pattinson as Batman. And the previews, the movie looked decent. I wasn't really, really sure about like all the violence in it and stuff like that. Not that I don't like violence. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is the fact of Batman punching somebody and then beating the fuck out of him.
Yeah, that initial scene that we first saw in the trailer, it was like the first look at Robert Pattinson's Batman. And we saw he snapped his arm. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven.
Yeah.
Seven total hits on one guy. Six out of the seven strikes straight to the face. I was like, oh my God, that's just too much. You might as well have the Batman be killing him. And then when you watch the movie and you see it, you're like, oh, okay. So they were violent, but you're being hit by Robert Pattinson. So they're fast, they're just not necessarily hard, sort of thing. Like, he struck really fast. They just weren't necessarily hard. They were still violent. Like, it would knock me out. But it's a second year. He's not Ben Affleck type strong where he's just slinging people and their heads get busted open up against a wall. Like, this is his second year. He's maybe like 25 and he's in good physical condition. And when he does it, he's obviously strong enough to dislocate or break an arm.
Yeah.
But those strikes, they weren't necessarily like bashing his face into the concrete. They were just like boom, 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 shocking and violent. They just weren't very... The guy had, at worst, a broken jaw and broken nose.
Yeah.
And maybe a broken orbital and a concussion. Maybe a fractured skull, but he's still alive. You know,
and a broken arm in a couple places.
You know, but it's not out of the realm of what Batman has done. I mean, look at the Arkham games. I do that in an Arkham game all the time. I snap a guy's arm and then boom, 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 boom. There's a combo you do where you just spam the shit out of X and you are beating the shit out of these guys. And the reason why it doesn't look as violent is because there's not blood, because you're just hitting them so fast and hard. So that doesn't really bug me, because it kind of reminded me of the Arkham games when he did that. They do that exact move. You stop someone and break their arm, and you just beat the hell out of them.
Now, I will say, Robert Pattinson as Batman is probably one of my favorite live-action Batman performances to date. He did phenomenal as Batman. Horrible as Bruce Wayne, like bottom of the barrel Bruce Wayne. I'm sorry.
But Wayne only had like a minute and a half of screen time.
Total screen time, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. There was the scene where he comes up and he has his glasses on. And then there's the scene where he's out in public. And the scene out in public wasn't as bad. Like, it wasn't like, oh, my God. But it was just, it was missing the Playboy billionaire part.
It was Spider-Man. It was Spider-Man 3, Peter Parker, gawk, cringe is what it was.
Yeah.
With
but
Peter
it,
Parker,
the,
yeah.
The difference is it fit the tone of the movie. The Peter Peter Parker didn't fit that tone of the movie. But this fit, and I think that's why it turned out a little bit better. But it was still kind of just put the suit back on, please.
Yeah, yeah. That's what it. That's what he reminded me of, though, was Peter Parker in Spider-Man 3 when he had the symbiote. Tobey Maguire with the hair kind of half trying to cover his face. It's greasy, and he's trying to be, you know, this big tough guy. And Tobey Maguire doesn't work like that. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And neither does Robert Pattinson. I mean, I know he played a sparkly vampire. Yay for him. But he just doesn't play the brooding, you know, depressed, gothic type Bruce Wayne that he should have been playing. It didn't suit him. It didn't suit his look. It didn't suit his
attitude.
This
Bruce Wayne should have been a more, like, mob boss kind of Bruce Wayne. Like, he didn't deal with mobs, but that's how he should have carried himself and how he should have acted. Is more of a conservative mob boss.
Yeah.
Like, you don't mess
yeah.
with Bruce Wayne sort of thing.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what we got out of his Batman. And I can see why they didn't do that. It would have been too similar.
Similar, yeah. But I will say that I love the redemption arc for Batman in the movie. The redemption arc for Batman was phenomenal.
And some people didn't like it, like the ending. Some people didn't like it. I can see why, but then again, go fuck yourself, because this isn't
yeah.
Nolan's Batman where everybody hates Batman, okay? You know, this isn't the end of The Dark Knight where Batman has to run off away from a bunch of dogs and a bunch of police. It's not how this works.
No.
That was a one-time thing. Yeah, people don't like Batman because he's breaking the law, whatever. The people of Gotham like Batman. The criminals of Gotham do not. That's exactly what they portrayed.
The biggest difference with this movie, and what a lot of people don't understand, is this is Batman early years. This is where he is trying to get... So Batman's whole thing was to strike fear in the hearts of criminals, but to also gain the trust, loyalty, and love of the city. That's throughout his entire history. That is what Batman has wanted to do for Gotham. He wanted the people to rally behind him to stop the criminals. And this was the beginning of that part of Batman's journey. Right there at the end of the Batman, that was the beginning of his journey of getting, you know, the people of Gotham City to rally behind him and be like, you know, we're not going to put up with this because we have somebody backing us that is going to, you know, deal with the shit that we can't necessarily deal with, but we're going to put you on notice that we're tired of this bullshit. That's what Batman wanted. And that's what this movie was about, because it's Batman in the second year of being Batman.
His villain.
The Riddler.
A lot of people, it was like a hit or miss with some people. Some people loved it. Some people hated it. Me, I loved it. The only thing I'm not crazy about was the costume.
It kind of had a scarecrow touch to it. That was the only thing that bothered me about it, was that it seemed like they were trying to mix the Riddler with the scarecrow. You know?
Yeah, but I like how it explained, like in the comics and games and stuff, it's like, how the fuck do these guys get their goons? Like the people that work for them. And this explained that. He's got followers on social media, and he had a manifesto, and he's the boss. And these people followed him. And then they executed his every order.
And we saw that at the end in the stadium.
Phenomenal scene, by the way. Great fight scene.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
The fight scenes in this were, are hands down the best Batman fight scenes we have seen. I wish
I
they might have, they would have added a little bit more of like a ninja acrobatic feel to it, but it was still mixed martial arts. It wasn't like Michael Keaton's and Christian Bale's Batman where they're trained to be ninjas, but they fight like they're boxers.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of weird seeing them fight. But yeah.
Yeah. Robert Pattinson, I will give it to him. He did very well as Batman. He really did.
Mixed with the Zoe Kravitz, Catwoman, like that chemistry.
Yes.
Boosted it even more. His relationship with Commissioner Gordon boosted it. His relationship with Alfred, even more, in my opinion. I thought the Alfred, Andy Serkis's Alfred was pretty good.
Yeah.
And I liked the relationship. He didn't have a lot of screen time, but the screen time that he was in was very important.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just enjoyed it. It was, there's very little flaws I can see with the movie.
And I can't wait till it comes out on, like, digital and stuff like that so we can rewatch it and review it. Because there were so many things that I want to point out within the movie that you and I talked about, but that I want to talk about on air. Unfortunately, that's not this show, and that kind of depresses me, but that's okay. I will say, though, that if you're around my age or even a little bit older, and you ever watched, or, you know, even if you're younger, did you ever watch the Adam West Batman TV series? There are a ton of Easter eggs in the movie for the Batman TV series. Ton of them. And you'll catch them if you'll know what I'm talking about. Okay, so I want to rank the Batmans last tonight. I want to talk about the Batmobiles for a second.
Okay.
I want to start with Robert Pattinson's Batmobile.
Okay. Do you want to just talk about Keaton, Bale, Affleck, and Pattinson? Because the others, they're just fans.
They're crap. They're crap. We're not going to talk about them. Yes. Yes.
Okay.
All right. Pattinson's Batmobile, based on a 67 Charger that had that massive fucking engine in the back.
Yeah, I think it was a lot of people aren't really pointing it out. I think it was a dual engine design. I think he had an engine in the back and the front, or else why the fuck would he have a blower in the front? Or like a hood scoop, sorry. And why are there lights, like, or light coming from the front? I think he had a dual engine design. He might have just had a rear engine. I don't know. I think it would be a lot cooler if it was a dual engine design, because that's like a realistic thing that can happen. And I think that would just be that much cooler. But if not, then oh well. Still a cool Batmobile.
I can't really tell. I'm trying to look at pictures online. It's really tough because they don't have a whole lot of, like, those from, you know, the movie out yet. But, I don't know. It might have been a dual engine, but he did have the big, you know, jet thruster on the back, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, Here we go. Robert Pattinson, Batmobile. Maybe I can get a little more off of this. I mean, I could probably read about it, but I don't have the time. Still, based on
holy shit.
Classic, what? Did you find it?
700 horsepower, four-wheel drive, optional EV drivetrain.
Ooh.
Is it a hybrid? I wonder if that front part is a hybrid engine.
I mean, that would be kind of cool.
There's an electrical engine. Oh, the stunt car is a Tesla powered. Never mind.
Oh. I mean, that would still be cool, because then he could run, you know, silent through the city if he needed to. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I still think it's double engine. I think it'd be make a lot more sense, because what the hell is on the front?
I said 67 Charger, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that I had my cars right. But yeah. I love the fact that it was based on a real vehicle. You know, that it wasn't this design that was so unique that, you know, it's almost comical to a point. You know, I mean, don't get me wrong, I love Michael Keaton's Batman, or Batmobile. But again, it's not based on a real car design. You know what I mean? Like, it's completely fabricated, the whole thing. I love the fact that it was based on a real car design. Again, that's another Easter egg for the 1960s Batman. I love how it had the big jet engine on the back. Again, another Easter egg. And I love the fact that it was just mean. You know, it was mean. It was tough. It was scary. If I saw that thing chasing me, I'd be driving like a bat out of hell, too. Pun intended.
Right. So it's based off a real car. It's just weird. The engine is a rear engine or a mid-engine design, but it's got side exhaust. Cool.
Yeah.
Don't know why they just wouldn't come out the back. It'd make more sense if they had it come out the back. So it's a rear-mounted V10 engine with swooping flares. Still not saying what's in the front.
Yeah, it's probably like a big Ram Air scoop.
And it might just be like all the stuff that they couldn't fit in the back, because that engine and jet thrusters big as shit.
Yeah. And, I mean, you're going to need a
big-ass battery to power all that.
Yeah. And you're going to need weight in the front, too, so.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about Ben Affleck's Batman, or Batmobile.
His makes sense for the universe, and it's not a bad design. The guns are just weird to see on it. But overall, it's not a bad Batmobile. Like, it's not ugly or nothing.
It's like a slid-down version of Christian Bale's.
Yeah, and I got to be honest, I like Affleck's Batmobile a bit more. I know the Tumbler's iconic and cool and awesome. It's a fucking tank. That thing is not fast at all. I don't care what it looks like in the movie. That thing is not fast. Batman has to be fast. It can drive through walls. Congratulations. I could care less. Why does Batman need to be driving through walls destroying civilian property? Makes no sense to me.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw Robert Pattinson's drive through stuff just fine. Drive through the things that needed to drive through just fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't get the whole it has to be a tank and it's big and slow and weird.
Yeah.
And
I did not like Ben Affleck, or Christian Bale's Batmobile. The Tumbler, it looks cool, but it's not practical as a Batmobile.
And it doesn't fit the universe at all. Like, it's supposed to be a realistic take on Batman. Why is he driving a fictional tank? Or a tank, quote-unquote. I'm calling it a tank because it's basically what it is. It's a tank without treads and without a big old gun on the top. It's not practical. It doesn't make sense for the universe, and I don't like it. I got to be honest. It looks cool. Not a fan.
It reminds me a lot of the Batman Beyond Batmobile, just with wheels. If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Because we see the Batwing in Dark Knight Rises, which, again, reminded me so much of the Batman Beyond Batmobile, which I love. I think it's cool, especially in the cartoon. But it's just, the Tumbler's not practical.
No.
You know, I didn't care much for the what's it called? The motorcycle that came out of it.
Yeah. The bat cycle in that movie was fit the
narrative.
Yeah, but why? Why does it have to do that?
Yeah.
It
was cool. It just wasn't practical for Batman.
Yeah, that's my argument with the Christian Bale's, oh, it's a realistic Batman, except it's not, because the Tumbler is not realistic. I've not once, besides promotion for the movie, have not once seen a vehicle remotely close to a Tumbler, ever. Not within military application, not within civilian application. There's a big-ass armored vehicle like that. It's probably a felony to own.
It's called an MRAP.
Yeah, and even those are just big-ass armored SUVs. Like, I know there's more to it, but those are four-door, easy-to-roll, big vehicles. This is weird. It doesn't even fit in a lane of traffic, first of all. I know the other ones don't really either, but this thing is really wide.
I have to correct you on that. All of the other Batmobiles, they fit in, you know, the typical...
I would argue Affleck's doesn't. His is a bit big, too.
Kind of, but it's a lot more scaled down than Christian Bale's.
Yeah,
you know,
I would other Batmobiles would be hard to drive on normal roads. The Tumbler is just even harder to drive on a normal road. But, yeah. Ben Affleck's Batmobile, I like it a lot. The guns are too much. I don't see why he would need guns, but that's the universe, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, Michael Keaton had guns.
Yeah, I don't really have a problem with Ben Affleck kills. I don't care. You know, all of the Batmans, whether you want to argue with who you saved them or not, he killed. They all killed. Every single one of them, besides Pattinson's, I think. I don't think Pattinson's killed. I'm sure he did.
No, he killed some of the people up on the rafters. If I remember correctly.
No, he threw them off the side, but are you talking about in the stadium?
Yeah.
Yeah, he threw them off the side, but the stadium was filled with water, so they were fine. They might have a broken neck, but they're fine.
And they may have... And I think they also had, like...
Yeah, they were all strapped up and harnessed.
Yeah,
so
that's right. Yeah.
He didn't really kill. He was very brutal, but I don't think he killed. You know, I could be wrong on the second or third watching through. But Bale's killed, Affleck's killed, Keaton's killed. They all killed. Whatever you want to, whether it didn't kill, he just prevented them from not living. They killed.
It's killing.
In some cases, it was murder because it was premeditative. Anything Batman does is premeditative. So, he murdered. Ben Affleck's Batmobile. I really don't have a problem with it. I don't like how it opened. I thought the weird, I like to call them ladybug doors because they kind of open like a ladybug opens its wings.
Yeah.
Those were a bit weird, but at the same time, they don't do that when he's driving. So, or unless he's jumping out of it, but either way, doesn't bug me. I thought it was a good Batmobile design. My favorite of all time, though, is definitely Pattinson's. It's got the perfect mix of it's realistic. People can build that if they really wanted to. They did build it. It's just Tesla-powered instead of V10 jet engine-powered.
Yeah, that'd be a little illegal.
Just a little bit. It's realistic to a sense. It's practical for what he needs. And it's cool looking. It's badass. It's one of the best, if not the best, Batmobile design, in my opinion.
I agree. Now Michael Keaton. Michael Keaton's Batmobile. It's ugly. Let's put that out there. But I love it. I love it for the fact that it is ugly.
The problem I have with it is that it's way too long.
Yes.
Like, it looks
yes.
like a good Batmobile. Like, the design is there from, like, the classic Batmobile designs.
Yeah.
It's just way too long. Like, they need to shave, like, a few feet off of it.
Yeah, the front end is huge.
Make it drivable, first of all. I don't even think they were able to drive it that well in the movie. Like, when they were filming, I don't think that car drove hardly at all. I think it was all made to look like it was driving, but I don't think they were able to drive that car very well, if at all.
I mean, they have road legal, you know, Michael Keaton Batmobiles. Obviously, Jeff Dunham owns one. So do a couple other people, like replicas and stuff. But the turning radius on it would be horrible. It's about the size of like an F-150. Extended bed, extended cab. It's huge. It's long.
Yeah, and Robert Pattinson's is based off of a 60s muscle car.
Yes.
All of those cars were freaking boats. Most of them were boats. They were big. They had a lot of horsepower. That's what they were. That's a muscle car. They were big boats. And if his is a big boat, then you know that Michael Keaton's is even a massive.
Yeah.
That thing is huge.
But it was still really cool in the movie. You know? I mean,
it fit the design of the movie.
It definitely fit the design of the movie. I will give you that. It was awesome. Okay. 23 minutes left. Let's get into the Batmans. Let's go ahead and rank Batman, and then we'll rank Bruce Wayne.
Right, so same thing as the Batmobiles. We're not talking about the other crappy ones.
Right, obviously.
Time, and they don't really matter. So, yeah.
Okay. So, for Batman, number one.
Do we want to start number one or number, was it five?
I would say number one. Start at number one.
Okay. Number one. That's it.
For Batman.
Okay.
For me, it's Pattinson and Affleck at the top.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Number, like, if performances, like actual performances, I got to give it to Pattinson. But for overall world building, I liked Bale's a little bit more. Or not Bale, Affleck's.
Affleck, yeah.
Yeah. I liked Affleck's interactions with people more, like with other superheroes. That's a little unfair because Pattinson didn't have other superheroes.
Neither did the other ones.
But Pattinson's interaction, I don't know, Pattinson's number one for me, but I enjoyed watching Affleck. It's like tied, really. Oh, we forgot to talk about Colin Farrell's Penguin. He is a magnificent Penguin.
Absolutely.
Yada, yada, yada. Number two. Affleck for me.
Affleck?
Yeah.
Or
Bale? Number one is Pattinson. Number two is Affleck. Number three.
Okay. So I'll give you number one and two. For me, it's Affleck and Pattinson are interchangeable at number one spot. number three for me, and you're going to completely and totally disagree with me on this, but I would have to say Keith.
You know, I completely and totally don't disagree with you.
Really?
Yeah, I disagree, but I don't completely disagree. For me, number three is Bale, and then number four is Keaton. I enjoyed Bale's performance a little bit more, and I liked his suit a lot more. But I can see why you put Keaton at number three. I understand
okay.
why.
Okay.
I thought I was gonna get shit for not putting Bale at number one, but I guess that's just opinion now.
Bale was so the reason why I put Keaton above Bale. For me, Keaton has, despite the fact that he could never turn his head, Keaton had the iconic suit. I love the black and yellow emblem on the chest. I absolutely love that. I love the belt. I'm trying to bring it up so I can describe it a little more.
Yeah.
I love the fact that he had the gold belt. You know,
I do like the
like,
yellow belt. I'm a fan of the yellow belt.
You know, and then he had all of his stuff on it. You know,
I think
all
the Batman iterations had a yellow or gold belt besides Pattinson. Pattinson's with more of a tactical looking black belt.
But
Affleck's was gold and worn, but yeah.
I just love that you know, black and gold, black and yellow, the symbol on his chest. I mean, to me,
I like it. I just don't think it makes sense for a ninja with a cape because he's not supposed to be seen hardly at all, and he's got a big-ass yellow circle on his chest, but it fits this thing. It fits the movie. Is it practical? I've never really liked the yellow circle bat symbols. I've always thought they looked kind of cartoonish and silly, but they fit in the uses that they were in. I like the more solid bat symbols like Affleck's and Bale's. Affleck's hands down got the best suit for me. I love his suit. His is the best Batman suit. But yeah, I put Bale at number three because I enjoyed his performance more than Keaton's. But I would say Keaton is the best, the worst of the best. And that's not like a...
That's not saying anything bad.
Yeah, I mean, if you're the worst at the best, then you must be pretty damn good.
You're still in the top five.
Yeah.
But, no, I do like Ben Affleck's suit, especially in the gray with the black Batman symbol on the front.
Yeah, I like the gray for the base for Batman. I don't mind whether the blue, black or blue, like cape and cowl, I don't really mind. It's just a symbol, really, for me.
Yeah. But, okay. So, I put Christian Bale down at the bottom. Just because...
Process of elimination?
Well, no, not necessarily. I put him below Keaton... Because I wasn't overly impressed with his Batman.
The problem I have with Christian Bale's Batman, he's never the star of his own movie. Besides in Batman Begins. He's never in Batman Begins, yes, he's the star of it. You can definitely tell that Christian Bale carries that movie. But then you have The Dark Knight, and you bring in Heath Ledger, and then Gary Oldman as Commissioner Gordon. He was in the Batman Begins, but his performance in The Dark Knight was also very exceptional. He just wasn't the best performance in that movie. And even in The Dark Knight Rises, he still wasn't the best performance in the movie. When you have something that is so great, and then you have a character that the movie is based around, and he's not even the best performance, it becomes a problem with me. Like, Robert Pattinson, best performance in the movie.
Yes.
He carried the movie on his shoulders. He had hands down the most screen time, and he did a phenomenal job. All right, and overall, that Batman is the most memorable part of the movie, and it's called The Batman for a reason.
Yeah.
When you look at Christian Bale's, what's the number one thing out of The Dark Knight? Heath Ledger.
Yeah. The thing with Christian Bale is the best thing that Christian Bale did throughout the entire three movies was his interaction with the Joker in the police station. Where the Joker got him to, like, you know, lose his cool. And that scene is Joker-focused. It's not Batman-focused. It's Joker-focused.
Yeah, the Joker carries that scene, or Heath Ledger carries that scene, I should say. I know, just every scene that Mike or Christian Bale, nothing against Christian Bale as an actor, but every scene that Christian Bale was in, he kind of got outperformed, in my opinion. Like, even interacting with Michael Caine as Alfred. A fantastic Alfred, by the way. If we ever rank Alfred, he's number one. But Michael Caine was just, he carried the scene. When you see Christian Bale on scene and then with another actor, the problem is they got too good of actors, really. They just got too good of actors. Morgan
Christian
Freeman,
Bale is a good actor. He really, really is. But
that's the thing.
Right, he got outshined.
He's a great actor, but you got golden standard actors up here. Michael Caine, Morgan Freeman, Heath Ledger, Liam Neeson. You just got Gary Oldman. There's Cillian Murphy. All those actors are better than Christian Bale, but Christian Bale's not a bad actor.
No, Christian Bale's a great actor. He just got outperformed.
Exactly. And that's the problem with those movies is that it's like the too much of a good thing. But
I mean,
it's not like there's too much good actors because the movies were fantastic. That's not a problem with the movie. That's a problem with the Batman. They should have shoved Batman in there a little bit more because it's a Batman movie. I mean, they're not labeled Batman, but The Dark Knight, the Batman, same freaking thing.
When Tom Hardy in a mask steals the entire movie from you, there's something wrong.
Yeah.
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 Oh, that,
with Gary Oldman with some glasses and a mustache steals the show.
Look.
There's nothing wrong with you. Just know that there's nothing wrong with you.
To be fair, any movie that Gary Oldman is in, any scene, even in Hannibal, when he played the messed up guy that got eaten by the pigs, Hannibal's first victim, every scene that Gary Oldman is in, he absolutely steals it. Like you could put Gary Oldman and Morgan Freeman in the scene together. Gary Oldman is going to steal the scene from Morgan Freeman.
That's
and
too
I
much
love
acting
Morgan
star
Freeman.
Power. That's too much star power. That's just
Gary Oldman is like it's like Johnny Depp. Any scene that Johnny Depp is in, he's gonna steal the scene.
Yeah. He's just one of those actors, but and that's not a problem with Christian Bale. There's just, you know, and the thing is with The Dark Knight, if you want to make the perfect Batman movie, take Robert Pattinson's Batman and his screen time and mix it with just throw Robert Pattinson's Batman and how much they focused on the Batman and just put it in The Dark Knight, I feel like those would be one of the best movies ever.
Robert Pattinson with Heath Ledger would have been phenomenal.
Yeah. And that's the thing, that The Dark Knight, I'm kind of getting tired of The Dark Knight being held to such a pedestal standard because it's got some things that can be held to a pedestal standard in it, but overall, no.
There's some weird parts in that movie.
It can be beat, is the thing. And I'm tired of people thinking that it can't be beat. Yes, it's a golden standard, but now there is another golden standard.
I would say the Batman actually outdoes Dark Knight in overall quality. Overall quality.
Yeah. That's the thing. There's only one The Batman movie. Maybe at the end of this trilogy, if they do a trilogy. I know they're doing a sequel, but maybe at the end of this time of this Batman, we'll have different opinions, but as it stands, I prefer Robert Pattinson's Batman.
Yeah. Okay, real quick, I have a feeling we could probably do this in 5 minutes. Bruce Wayne, top of the line, Ben Affleck.
Yeah, Ben Affleck did the best Bruce Wayne.
Next for me is Michael Keaton.
You see, next for me would be Christian Bale. I really enjoyed Christian Bale's Bruce Wayne persona. I really enjoyed it. That's the thing. I feel like he focused too much on Bruce Wayne instead of Batman. It was like I wasn't watching Batman. I was watching Bruce Wayne in a costume. Does that make sense?
For like there Michael Keaton?
For Christian Bale. I felt like there was no distinction between the two. So number one for me is Ben Affleck. Number two is Christian Bale. I really liked Christian Bale's Bruce Wayne. And then number three would be Michael Keaton. I didn't enjoy Michael Keaton's Bruce Wayne performance all that much. It was just kind of weird. And Batman with a perm doesn't work at all.
It's 89. Give it a rest. So
yeah, it didn't age well.
It didn't. So I'll tell you why I put Michael Keaton over Christian Bale. The thing for me, and we know that Christian, like Batman Begins is, you know, obviously very first, you know, when he becomes Batman, he doesn't know how to be Bruce Wayne and stuff like that. But by the second one, you know, he's got this, you know, I'm a rich guy, playboy, I'll do whatever I want attitude as Bruce Wayne. And then in number three, he's got the I'm a broken person Bruce Wayne because, you know, one of my best friends died. And I lost the girl of my dreams, and now I just want to be depressed. The thing for me with Michael Keaton over Batman and Batman Returns is the fact that Michael Keaton was able to play two separate roles. He played Bruce Wayne as Bruce Wayne, even though it was a little rough, it was still Bruce Wayne, you know? And then you had Batman, and Michael Keaton played Batman as Batman, and that's how it's supposed to be. You know, it's the same thing with Ben Affleck. Ben Affleck plays Bruce Wayne and plays Batman. You know, he's able to differentiate the two, and that's what Michael Keaton's able to do, and that's what Christian Bale could not do. Christian Bale was, and I kind of get it, you know, the Bruce Wayne is the alter ego and Batman is the persona, but Christian Bale portrayed that way too much. You know, like his Bruce Wayne was just way over the top. When he drove the car into the other car, you know, when he wrecked his car to save somebody.
Yeah.
So he's like, I didn't know that was that. I was just trying to catch the light. You know, he could have been like, you know, he could have played that scene a little better. And that scene hurts. That scene hurts his, Bruce Wayne, because he tries to play the rich, snobby, you know, uppity, I'm like, you know, up here over everybody else type person, when Bruce Wayne is supposed to be a man of the people. And that's what Ben Affleck does. Because we see that in Batman versus Superman. You know, we see his emotional side. And Christian Bale never portrayed that in any of his movies, and I didn't like that.
I don't know. I think Michael Keaton did a better job of transitioning from Batman and Bruce Wayne, but I prefer Christian Bale's Bruce Wayne. Some of his things are a bit over the top, but I think that's just him not caring to be Bruce Wayne. Like, he's just, whatever. Like that scene you were mentioning, the guy was just acting dumb and stupid. I think that's just Bruce Wayne not caring to be Bruce Wayne, and he's just, his main focus in that scene was to save the guy instead of be Bruce Wayne. In that moment, he was Batman, and then he had to switch to Bruce Wayne really quick, and it was kind of like a, I would say like a panic, for lack of a better word, a panic moment, where he's like, whatever.
The thing is that's the beauty of, you know, Batman and Bruce Wayne, is that Bruce Wayne can be both. You know, and we see this in, you know, other iterations of Batman, you know, like the animated series and any of the animated movies, especially the animated series, Batman, the animated series from the 90s. That is a perfect depiction of Bruce Wayne and Batman. And I think that's what Ben Affleck captured in his. And I think that's why both of us put him as number one.
Yeah.
You know, but that's why I put Michael Keaton as number two, simply because of his ability to switch between the two. So, I forgot to turn the light on before we broadcasted, so it's really dark in the studio right now. I don't know if you can tell.
That's all right.
All right, we've got 5 minutes left. I do want to thank Alex, as always, for tonight. Hell of a show. Hell of a show, always. Yeah. I love talking about Batman. I really do. He is my favorite DC character. And I love talking about, you know, especially the live action, because there's so much diversity within each, how each actor plays each character that they're supposed to be.
Yeah, that's the thing. They're all different.
Yeah, they all have their great points. They all have their bad points. Except for Robert Pattinson, who sucked as Bruce Wayne, but we'll see him later. I understand why he was horrible as Bruce Wayne. Right now, he's down at the bottom, just because of this movie. I hope we get to see more, and I hope they do a better job of portraying him as Bruce Wayne, because I really want to see the Batman the Animated Series separation between Bruce Wayne and Batman, and the Ben Affleck separation between Bruce Wayne and Batman. But yeah.
And we'll see more of Michael Keaton and
Ben Affleck,
Batman Bruce Wayne's, because they're both returning
in The Flash.
Yeah, and Michael Keaton's is returning in the background. I think Michael Keaton's is going to be the mainstay Batman in the DCU from now on. Kind of bummed about it, but it's whatever.
And it may change your mind on, you know, your rankings, but we'll have to see. We'll have to revisit this topic again in a year.
Probably 2 years. Flash movie, well, all the DCEU movies got pushed back a year.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll have to revisit this topic again here, you know, when we get new material. All right. I want to thank all of our listeners, supporters, and followers. We greatly, greatly appreciate you guys. We love you guys. You know, you give us so much, you know, for lack of better terms, joy when, you know, when I see new followers to the page. New views and stuff like that. I love it. I really do. You know, thank you again. Support your veterans, fire, police, and EMS. And as always, ladies and gentlemen, be safe, be smart. We want you back here every night that we broadcast on Wiki Curiosity Media, every Sunday night for Movie of the Week, every Tuesday night for Fogs and Grace Podcast, every Wednesday night for The Cinephiles, and every Friday night for Note by Note. The Guy in Glasses will be having a show Friday. I'm not sure if he's going to be streaming on Twitch. I know he will be on Blog Talk, but I'm not sure if he'll be streaming on Twitch. We'll have to see how that goes. Sunday, we are having a movie of the week, and we are actually going to be talking about No Way Home, Spider-Man, because it is now on video and on demand. So we are going to be talking about No Way Home, if we can get, you know, if my co-host shows up. So, you know, go ahead, go rent it, because there are going to be spoilers. So, yeah, Spider-Man No Way Home, Sunday. Go watch it. Check us out Sunday. I hope you guys have a fantastic rest of your Wednesday night. Have a fantastic rest of your week. We'll see you back here Sunday night for Behind the Screen Movie of the Week.
Yeah, good night.
Good night, everybody. Okay, I turned the live off.
Okie doke.
So, great show. Awesome
yeah.
show. I'm literally sitting here in the dark because I forgot to turn the lights on when we started. It was light
yeah.
when I turned the lights on, or when we started.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, awesome show. I love talking Batman.
I do too. It's a good topic.
So, yeah. Yeah. But, all right, I'm going to end the episode here.
All righty.
And I'll get on the video if you still want to talk.
If you want to, yeah.
Okay. Give me one second.
All righty.